Blog Talk Radio.
Darkness within each of us needs an opportunity to be heard,
understood and embraced. So whether it comes in the form of a whisper or a scream, we will carry forth the poetry that expresses the haunting echoes within your soul. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. Now, tonight is our dark poetry night. If you find that is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right, what's going on?
Oh, life is good. Life is good. It's a bit chilly, but that's all right. Got good poetry, good company. I'm very excited to be doing the dark show. I see Mamya hanging out on the board in Late Night Poets. Hello, Mamya. Good to see you. I feel good and relaxed right now. We've got a great lineup of poetry inspired by the black art of Francisco Goya. I'm trying to think of anything specific exciting happening, but not really. Today was a stay-indoor kind of day, and you know what? Some days are just like that. So, but I have to say, I really like that intro song by Uriah Heep. I don't know what exactly the instrument, if it's a guitar or another, like a keyboard or something, but that eerie effect that they create works really well.
Going back a bit.
It is an older song. It is, but you know, and I like it. I like it. I wasn't sure if the lyrics were quite dark enough, but I thought, you know, for some reason, I really felt like, besides the fact that, you know, the name of the show, I felt like there was something haunting in the lyrics and something, I don't know, I can't quite describe it right, but yeah, I mean, gosh, what is that? Did that song have to be like, what, from the 70s or something?
Yeah, they got together in 1969.
Okay. Yeah, well, anyways, I do like it. So, and I do like Uriah Heep. Good stuff. Yes, I'm very excited for tonight's poetry, as always. Hanging out with you and maybe other cool poets, one never knows. With that being said, I think we can go ahead and get the ball rolling.
All right. Hello, Manuel. How you doing? An Artist of Many Lives by Peter Solway. A Madonna's Treasure, Apprentice to the Future, a keen Francisco Goya, Madrid in sight, mother's packed lunch. Darling of the tall windowed courts, Cocker with a paintbrush, loaded palettes, morning's commission, afternoon's pencil sharpening. Evening's candle lit, topic of envied conversation, majas with fans, latest perfumes, shadows moving. Should have died in his prime, coffin silk lined, not mock satin, egalitarian cotton, dreams of a Spanish heaven, mother of gold weeping. Successful son to boast at the widow's sewing club, royal genius bestowed by highest patron. Palace sluts, always a lad of sacred appetite, nipple biting, milk of cream, heading to the top. St. Francisco in ascension, ample angels to spread wings, model, oriental, art eternal, with the third king, father's approval. but mad to survive, doctor alive, sick as the fevered inquisition, tongues and confession, god of damage, demons glowing. Deaf freelance artists comprehending to decorate barn of dark dining room. Monet in hell, Giverny of adult education, feast of Auschwitz to come. Cathartis in oils, tomes of witness testimonies, taverns of the damned, hunting dogs of Napoleon, arsenic drinks of champions to down. See the firing squad comes, no more pretty picnics, prelude to Munich's scream when the troops have gone. Pregnant women leaving, bustard infants, witches to come, keep tune with defeat. Mud in the quicksand of revolution, geology of democratic nowhere land, time and space sinking without scent, reason, lorded ambition. Life's sick competition, death's race to win, Caravaggio on the inside lane, cave dweller grunting. Escape stupid history. France fleeing, greedy sons of Spain, knife sharpening, page turn, always a subject to sketch and learn. Ancient impressionist, expressionist, Goya, Prince of Oils, precursor of surrealism, still learning how to look and put, keep up with the race. Slippery dip a future down, overtake bleak defeat, in a modern synthetic coffin, finally settle for rest. Milkmaid of Bordeaux, last and first rights, to lean against the vast human cow of French skies. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what an amazing write by Peter Solway, who pays tribute to the complexity of Francisco Goya, whose artwork was quite varied. His Black Art series was a reflection of a time period where he basically went through depression and an existential crisis, questioning the meaning of life and the despair of it all. But he was also an extremely religious man, which comes across in many of his artwork. As always, Peter has quite the bite to his writing. And here he does, even literally, as he brings up nipple biting, milk of cream, heading to the top. I get the impression that he kind of speaks sardonically on the idea of perhaps that Goya was a mama's boy, though I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the impression I get from Peter's poem. I really like where he says, see the firing squads come, no more pretty picnics, prelude to Munch's scream when the troops have gone. And what else? Where would he bring it in? Oh, yeah. Where ancient impressionist, expressionist, Goya, Prince of Oils, precursor of surrealism. And I like that he put in there the precursor of surrealism, giving a nod towards how Goya inspired many future artists. What else? Wordplay. Yeah, he had some great wordplay in here, like where he says, oust witch, feast of oust witch to come. Like you think of the Auschwitz, the concentration camp, but here it's spelled differently. It's spelled W-I-T-C-H, giving, I think, a nod to that, especially in his Black series for Goya, there were quite a few paintings that had to do with satanic entities. I'm bouncing all around, but I have to say I was very impressed with what seemed to me to be a write on the rise and fall of a very important artist. So great write and very well done. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
I think he notes who Goya was, yes, but he also takes a bite at him too, because he was known as a social climber, that crack about cream to the top, so to speak, trying to rise within the political class that he wasn't born into. And he hinted other things. I mean, like the morning's commission, afternoon's pencil sharpening, candlelit, topic of envy conversation, Majas with fans, lace perfume, shadow moving. Pick of palace sluts, always the lad of sacred appetite, never biting, milk of cream heading to the top. So I guess he understood the court's games that needed to be played and didn't mind indulging. Well, that's the illusion anyway. And he does hit on the disease that left him deaf on the back end. Deaf freelance artist comprehending to decade barn of dark dining room, Monet and Hell, Givenet of adult education, ceased at Auschwitz to come. He was considered one of the last old masters and the beginning of the new masters, so to speak, because he did die in the early 19th century. So he was coming off the back end of the old ones and moving the art world in the direction where the new thoughts to masters came about.
I like that. I like that. The last of the old bastards before the new bastards started coming in. That was an awesome comment. Very cool.
I said masters,
very cool.
Not bastards.
Yeah, and I did not know that about him being a social climber. But, you know, it makes sense. That really was a time period. Throughout, there was many time periods, I'm sure, throughout history where you were an artist, you had to depend on people, who had the money to support your art. So very cool. I learned something new. And what do we got next, Rex?
Lost Waste by Jacqueline H.
All right. A darkened, shadowy sky stirs, creeps, gathering force, captured in a cloak of clouds, wastes lost, gather the abandoned, tormented, crazed as cracks in time. Burrowing owl grabs at the dead, feeds on the fear from their bones. Disguised as mother's love, cloaked by destruction, look temerously. A curdled, bloody existence calls and carries them away. A hellish torture or blessed relief, sweetness in death's face, besieged by my likeness. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, that title kind of offers up a note, Lost Waifs. So, plus the voice kind of gives a notion of those who've walked outside their basic functional notes to their beliefs. And that hit on the back end, a hellish torture or blessed relief, sweetness in death's face, besieged by my likeness, kind of hits at the idea of death, because thus walk into the also the burrowing owl grabs at the dead, feeds on the fear from their bones. So it could be a battlefield, or it could be the idea of society so corrupt and full of themselves that now comes down to the fact that death walks easily, and there's still fear being held within that note.
Yeah, I like that. I like I have to say, I kind of see a social commentary here in the idea of a society that pretends to care, especially in the lines disguised as mother's love, those uncloaked by destitution. But I did really like that imagery and the metaphor of a burrowing owl grabs at the dead, feeds on the fear from their bones. That's interesting to me. And the idea of a creature that's usually used to signify wisdom, burrowing down to dig at the bones, and it's almost like the destruction of the bones of humanity. What makes humanity good is being destroyed by this appetite of greed. And I like how in the second stanza she goes into that idea in the final lines of death being a sense of relief, and which makes me think towards the idea of children, suffering, or even not children alone, but people suffering so much that death does become that relief, that it lifts the burden of the pain of life away. I have to say, the other day I saw a video. I stumbled across a video of a mother hamster or gerbil, a mother gerbil, because gerbils and hamsters will eat their young, eating her babies. And that's what this poem reminded me of. And oh my God, I could have gone my whole entire life without seeing a mother gerbil eating her little pink babies. And now that I have, I can't get that image out of my head. But the reason the gerbils do that, as you probably might know, Rex, is that self-preservation, because if they feel like they can't take care of like their babies and they can't take care of themselves at the same time, well, obviously, then, the instinct of nature takes over. And this kind of has that whole mother's eating their babies type thing, which, is just, but used in a metaphorical way, and I think Jacqueline did a really great job on bringing up some thoughts on society's destruction of the weak. Amazing write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Black Magic by Scott Sharp. Along the astral body, deep into the scornful sky, static pictures flash through time. Motion pictures dance, celestial crowds, stitching seam twixt planet and star, spectral spine of the Milky Way. House of Scorpions, Pluto plunges into blackened matter below the rising, simmering sun, shadows etched like memories, falling stars sprinkle Jupiter's surface. Stone sent prayer, kneeling under the waning moon and voodoo doll, perceive, burn like mercury, temperature rising, descending moon, owl eyes glowing from fixed stars, moving man, depleted strength, lunar cries. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I feel like House of Scorpions could be like a heavy metal song. If it isn't already, it should be. It should be. But I love the imagery in this. The use of the word twixt, celestial crowd, stitching seam, twixt planet and star, spectral spine of the Milky Way. It gives it a real classic feel. Amazing imagery and metaphors. To me, this speaks on mankind's desire throughout history to understand the cosmos and how we apply a magical element to the planet, to the movement of the planets. I really thought this had great lines all the way through, but I especially set, like, stone sent prayer kneeling under the waning moon and voodoo doll pins perceived burn like mercury, temperature rising, descending moon, owl eyes glowing form, fixed stars, moving man, depleted strength, lunar cries. And I think, to me, I get the impression in that last stanza that it speaks on the idea of seeking revenge only to destroy ourselves. So great thought-provoking write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, Doug hits on the idea of black magic, and he walks in that plane of there's still so much that we don't know that basically what we conjure up is the idea of magic because we're not giving it a real voice as to what we do know. We're just offering up little piddling guesses, estimates, theories, and wild conjectures as to how it works. Because even with that first stanza, it's on the note of spectral spine of the Milky Way. Description walks up nicely that way. The second one, House of Scorpions, Pluto plunging. Consider House of Scorpions a nice dark poisoned arena, so to speak. And the thought of Pluto, you're looking at the back end of the universe. And then you've got a shadows that's like memories, falling stars sprinkled Jupiter's surface. So there's a nice touch of how everything, anything that gets comes through the solar system, it all gets sucked into Jupiter. It just kind of disappears in the moment because that planet is so huge. It morphs just about everything. It does morph everything around it. So on the back end, the idea of we're still paying attention to the stars, the planets, and the motion of everything above, that we kind of lean into it easily.
I like that. I like that, the idea that we depend too much on it almost. But I really like that you brought up Jupiter and how, because of its size, so many things get sucked into it. Because that really made that part, when you were talking about that really made that part stand out to me more. Like memories, falling stars, sprinkle Jupiter's surface. And that idea of, you know, everything that we lose within our lifetime that we can never gain back, those moments that we lose. But, yeah, great comment there, Rex. All right. And what do we got next?
The Monsters Inside by Naomi Serra.
All right. And she wrote to one of my all-time favorite Goya paintings as far as darkness goes, which is Saturn Eating His Son. All right. The Monsters Inside by Naomi Serra. Monsters lurking in the darkest corner of our brain, within our deafened misery, clawing, leaping, feasting, swallowing us alive, demons burned into our head that sneer and scoff and shame, biting and gnawing, chewing away, devouring our eye, until behind is left but a name we curse and drag through the mud, bruised, broken, beaten, only exists but a reeking stink of soured slime, oozing from ourself, disemboweled, piercing fangs and sharpened claws, ripping us into scattered shreds, dragging us down a Freddy's Elm Street, where we stumble upon our own shadows, trembling alone inside our shackled mind, our light snuffed out by suffocating darkness, where all around flesh-famished beasts, their cravings fierce, demolish our dreams. Within a hellish dance of despair, our torn limbs grasping out for air, amidst damned souls we hang in ghastly gallows of our hope's decay, wandering astray, eternally trapped in the putrid rot of our lost tomorrows, swallowed by an eternal night, blood spurting from our headless necks, on bleeding bones we crawl beneath the black moon's agonizing scrawl. End poem. And oh wow, what an absolutely powerful and visceral dark light. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, went deep into the darkness and the monster angle, the monster being the individual, and even that dip in the hell, offering up that note of what befalls those who actually fall the furthest. That note, the last one, blood spurting from our headless necks, on bleeding bones we crawl, beneath the black moon's agonizing scrawl. Nice. I mean, let's see, was it bruised, broken, beaten, only exists for the reeking stink of foul slime oozing from our self disemboweled. Hey, there's a nice picture, perfect note of inquisitional style devouring, except it's being done by the beastish you pay company to, because, hey, the rest of your uneternal life shall see this night after night after night, screaming into the depths of madness.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. It's just a really brilliant dark light on self-destruction. And I like that she, as you were saying, it's the monster, but it's the monster within ourselves. And I like how she takes Goya's painting and uses it as a metaphor for the destruction of self. And piercing fangs and sharpened claws, ripping us into scattered shreds, dragging us down a Freddy's Elm Street where we stumble upon our own shadows, trembling alone inside, our shackled mind, our light snuffed out by suffocating darkness. I really like that part and how she says our shackled mind, the idea that we become of someone who has become a prisoner. And, you know, and I like that she uses R as, you know, that perhaps she's speaking of an individual who's dealing with multiple personalities. Or it could be like speaking in society in general, but it could also be the idea of one mind that has gone completely insane and been shattered into separate parts. I also really like how she puts the I in lowercase, and she says devouring our I, you know, like devouring the essence of ourselves. Then the viscerality of, you know, only exists but a reeking stink of soured slime oozing from ourself disemboweled. And I really appreciate the visceralness of that imagery, and how she does speak on how violent self-destruction can become. So great dark light and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Saturn devouring his sons. Art Chunky. Oh, SoundCloud.
Oh, yep, we do have a SoundCloud, and here we go.
Saturn devouring his sons. Jupiter is gold beyond the moon. Usurper of stars, his light shines the brightest. Policemen are combing the woods, flashlights shaking an impossible night. They don't wear headlamps or carry caged canaries into this kind of blackness. Sky doesn't suffocate the way the earth does where a man tries to bury his own evil. How do baby boys, born to the sunlight through the loving tunnels of their mother's bodies, end up following their father's nightfall, down the long-throated caves to his rocky black heart? Don't they know that darkness can rip and swallow a man? Will eat him up alive, the way Saturn devoured his sons.
great read and write, Art Junkie. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And your thoughts on this poem, Rex?
Well, you get a nice intonation of ease in that first three lines, but then it kind of it curtails itself and walks a little darker. That second stanza was nicely done. But I like that note. They don't wear headlamps or carry caged canaries into this kind of blackness. Sky doesn't suffocate the way Earth does, where a man tries to bury his own evil. And the thought of canaries was all that when the 19th century they carried canaries into the cave, the tunnels, for digging out coal and such, because if the canaries started dying, you knew there was a methane leak and it was time to get out before everybody died. So that was a nice touch. I like that note to the eternal underground where things can go wrong easily. The back end of this was a look at how things can go vastly wrong. That note of how bad the father is and the way.
Yeah. You know what? I can definitely see that. I can definitely see that. And, yeah, I really like how she took the painting and brought it into the darkness of even modern times. In one of her responses to a comment, she said, I think Goya understood this darkness and it scared him. This is why I think his black paintings are so terrifying. You know, and I have to say there is something terrifying about his black paintings because they represent not only his own personal despair, but the darkness within society. I too really liked that caged canary part, and I'm glad you brought that up. I've used a similar metaphor in a dark poem of my own, the idea of the caged canary brought down by the miners and the suffocating. And this was quite the brilliant dark right all the way through. But I like how, to me, the last stanza speaks on like a generational curse type thing, you know, and not a literal curse, but the idea of how abusive behavior and dark behavior and even psychological problems can be passed down from one generation to the next, and how, you know, all infants are born with this innocence about them. And then depending on where they are raised and how they are raised, you know, that innocence is replaced with a darkness that destroys one generation to the next. So great dark right and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Bewitched and Bewildered by Ignorance by Art Simpson. Ex perpexlation vexes the stratosphere, more than jet fuel ever could. Once white sky's statures bleed crimson at sunset, creased crinkle cut platinum clouds, glacier, enforced movement caused by atmospheric cackle. Soon, freakish forked lightning will explode, activated by sulfuric, sulfatic tongued roil and broil, emaciated faces bonneted by more than meager cloth. O stricken earth, defiled air, ferocious fire, and contaminated water, we bid the elementals to cleanse thee, and thou and thine. O four winds, we charge thee to impregnate clouds with our spells. Fireball, quench, entrench, lock jaw war, and rumors of war. Fearless wenches, we cast truth's spell upon all oceans. O putrid air, be purified by the perpetual poultice of our seeking. End poem.
great read there, Rex. I do have to say, I do miss Eric's voice, but if it has to be replaced by another voice, I am glad it is yours. Wow. You know, Eric has brilliant imagery and metaphors and great use of alliteration. Hex perplexions vexes the stratosphere more than jet fuel ever could. Once white sky statures bleed crimson at sunset, creased, crinkle, cut platinum clouds, glacier. I like the imagery in that and how the first line makes me think of the idea of the dark magic within the human spirit and, you know, within the elements, and how we shouldn't necessarily dismiss such things. I also like where he brings in the Royal Boyle. Like, it makes me think of Shakespeare, Royal Boyle, Troil. Was it double? I forget, but you know what I mean. Toil and trouble.
Bubble,
yeah,
bubble,
that
toil and trouble, cauldron boil and cauldron bubble.
Yes, that's it. And then the second part of this poem, with O stricken earth, defiled air, ferocious fire, and contaminated water, we bid the elements to cleanse thee and thou and thine. Really like the classic feel to this and how he goes into the idea that the equivalent of dark magic nowadays is how we continue to destroy the earth until there's no more sense of balance. And I really like the use of the phrase lockjaw. My paternal grandmother had a sister. No, I take that back. My maternal grandmother had a sister who actually died of lockjaw. But fireball, quench, entrench, lockjaw war, and rumors of war. I like how that speaks on how easily the poison of rumors can be spread. But amazing dark right and very well done. And Rex, you did do a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, that note in the second one, we bid the elemental, where was it now? Oh, four winds, we charge thee to impregnate clouds with our spells. Yeah, we've been doing that a bit too much over the past 60 or so. Maybe that thought of impregnating clouds might not be so much a good idea, considering how much chemical shit we put up there for the last 70 years. So,
right.
We don't know the full back end of what that does. Although they keep telling us, "Oh, we're doing this, we're doing that." Get away from this. Put your faint fawning away, because it is faint fawning at the moment. But I do like the notes of that first stanza. Some great lines. Once white sky statues bleed crimson at sunset. A nice note to a morning sunrise. And creased, crinkle cut platinum clouds, glacier. Nice tone in there. And then it's activated by sulfatic tongued, royal and broil, emaciated faces bonded by more than meager cloth. There's a darkness in that stanza of almost like a nuclear winter, so to speak. And then he hits on the stricken earth, defiled air, ferocious fire, contaminated water. That kind of does speak on the idea of a nuclear war, especially with the fireball quench, the lockjaw jaw, rumors of war. And that note, the perpetual pulses of our seeking. I like that tone. Not so much a poultice if we've blown it all to bits. But we can hope and seek some more, maybe.
That is so true. That's so true. Great observation, Ben. Very cool. All right. What do we have next?
Dinner for the Behemoth by Dorkin Lawrence.
Very cool. All right. I watched in horror as the pale, lifeless body dangled from the behemoth's giant fists, my face catching spurts of blood as he ripped off pieces as if he was just a big guy with horrid table manners. I could hear the bones snapping and cracking as he devoured them, his wide eyes in food heaven, his guttural heavy breathing between each bite echoed through the cave. Even if I were to somehow survive this ordeal, I knew my mind would not. The sights and sounds would be with me forever. Why did I ever agree to join this hunt for Bigfoot? Why did we all decide that we spotted him going into this cave and that we must follow him to capture him? Why did we fall into this thing's trap, captured ourselves? Well, he has eaten the last of my group like they were finger food. Now, left not a trace, we ever existed, and now my eyes are salting the meat as I begin crying and begging for my life as he is reaching down for the last bites of his dinner. End poem. And
nice.
Your
great
thoughts?
I got chicken fingers for Bigfoot. I like that story. But it also reminds me of Odysseus and the Cyclops, and the Cyclops eating off his crew. So, I like this way, being so full of yourself that you think you can capture a Bigfoot, only to become the meal, what you would call, hey. You get served up the last meal, except the last meal is you.
Yep. I have to agree. I have to agree, yeah. I liked that whole concept. And I like how she delves not only into the physical horror, but also the psychological horror, especially when she says, even if I were to somehow survive this ordeal, I knew my mind would not. The sights and sounds would be with me forever. But this is great, dark storytelling. I also really liked where she said, my eyes are salting the meat. You knew even before you read the rest of that line that my eyes are salting the meat was an expression for crying, and I think that worked really well. I also like the questioning in here, like why, it's that moment you can feel like the character just questioning the decisions that led them to that point. So great dark storytelling and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Pathos by Robert J. Tice. You bet I bleed. Don't look so shocked. Of course I've been impaled before. I never really dwelt on it. Since you ask, I'll say it here. The doors of chance have slammed on me. The spit of hate has sprayed my face. I saw my parents battle death, then turned to ghosts in hospitals. I've sent pure love into the void and watched it dive towards nothingness. I've squandered hard-fought, costly things, surrendered more to vanity. I ponder, wander labyrinths, become or shun the Minotaur. Some days I soared as Icarus, then headfirst, wingless, fell from sun. Or I had been Odysseus, swept out to sea, slow to recoup. I shoved the rock of Sisyphus, debated all my pointlessness. I stood like Arthur, sword and all, aghast at shattered Camelot. I studied dust in living rooms, the secret syntax of the walls. I contemplated edges, sides, the threshold at the exit sign. I've heard the silence note for note, compose a dirge for mortal dreams. I've learned the language of the floors, their creaking verbs and groaning nouns. I know now why most old doors weep and how the living haunt a house. I've sensed the chessboard of regrets, the emptiness one error brings. Miscalculations, crucifix, the nails that hammer hands and feet, the thorny crowns of disbelief that rack the skull of certainty. Yes, I have prayed and given thanks for all of this. Yes, all of this. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I like how he speaks in the voice of somebody who, like a god or somebody with a higher power, somebody who's revered and worshipped. You know, at the opening lines, "You bet I bleed, don't look so shocked. Of course I've been impaled before." I saw my parents battle death and turn to ghosts in hospitals. I've sent pure love into the void and watched it dive towards nothingness. I like how he delves into mythology, but at the same time, there's a heartfelt reality to this rite. I saw my parents battle death and turn to ghosts in hospitals. I've sent pure love into the void and watched it dive toward nothingness. And I like how that line there about dive towards nothingness, you know, speaks on that idea of that unrequited love. And then I really like, "Some days I soared as Icarus, then head first, wingless, fell from sun. Or I have been Odysseus, swept out to sea, slow to recoup." I think to me this speaks on how those simple moments in life, the whole journey in life, especially when you're dealing with loss and you're dealing with depression, can feel like a battle within itself. And the metaphor of the chessboard works really well too. I've come to the chessboard of regrets, the emptiness one error brings. You know, I don't play chess myself, but from what I understand about it, obviously, you know, like one wrong move and, you know, you're just basically, you're stuck, you're lost. I know I play this game on my phone where you have to organize like different colored balls. And if you do the wrong moves, you basically like put yourself into a corner. And I like how those lines there, that line there think, makes me think of that whole idea of looking back at your life choices and realizing the moves that have placed you into the corner you have gone into. So, you know, wonderful, thought-provoking write that is both dark and philosophical. And very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Oh, because of how he opened up, "You bet I bleed, don't look so shocked. Of course I've been impaled before. I never really dwelt on it. But since you ask, I'll say it here." And then that a recitation of a life seeing and feeling everything that's gone on. And you get to the back end where you walk. But it's kind of the offering note of what would you get from Christ if you sat down with him and you told him to explain the end and everything that went through it after that. And this is what you get. Because he's lived everything else since. Sort of, "I stood like Arthur. I've studied dust in living rooms, the secret syntax of the walls. I've heard the silence note for note composed as dirge for mortal dreams. Learning the language of the floors, the creaking verbs and groaning nouns." And then finish out with "miscalculations, crucifix, the nails that hammer hands and feet, the thorny crowns of disbelief that rack the skull of certainty. Yes, I have prayed and given thanks for all of this. Yes, all of this. I do it all again.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that ending up because, yeah, that was an important part with the idea that, you know, no matter how dark life is, there's can always be that sense of hope, that sense of accomplishment. So very cool there. All right, and what do we have next?
God. Aimless Skating by Liquid Mind Forever.
All right. Damn you, vultures of my flesh, refresh yourselves, enmeshed against old Dante's crash. Trickling blood outpours like frothy fountains, boiling broth. Seven sins, the deadly bunch, prehensile lunch, seventh sloth. This damn spot, it refuseth me the witch's stew, slight of hue in plain view askew, who asks of you to weigh your worth on Troy's best mare. There, beware, none who bear their share set the snare. Duped by death, we look askance, a dance macabre, sulfic voice, priestless choice, hoist the mote, smite the eye that garners lust, thus abracadabra, do the saintly faint, how daintily they star by rote. Howl, ye phantom burnished oils, thick the coils of rue, be tainted by the painted breath, as death bescowls on cue. End poem. And what a brilliant dark rite. And your thoughts, Rex?
Got that note, the first one. Seven sins, the deadly bunch, prehensile lunch, seventh sloth. All right. A tote there. And then rolling into Shakespeare with Lady Macbeth. This damn spot, it refuseth me. And then the witch's stew, sleight of hue, in plain view askew, who tasks of you to weigh your worth on Troy's best mare? There, beware, none who bear their share set the snare. Troy's best mare, we're talking about Helen there. And then duped by death, we look askance at dance macabre, sharpened voice, a priestess choice, hoist the mote, smite the eye that garners lust, thus, abracadabra, do the saintly faint, how daintily they starve by rote. Oof. And then I like that the finishing note. Howl, ye phantom burnished oil, thick the coils of rue, be tainted by the painted breath as death scowls on cue. There's a nice dark note in the finish, that idea of having it leap from the canvas itself.
I like that. I like that. The how it, you know, speaks on the darkness that comes from the canvas. But yeah, it was very cool the way she went from, you know, Dante's Inferno to the reference to the witches of Shakespeare. I like how it was the Trojans that had the Trojan horse. For some reason, the Troy's best mare made me think of the Trojan horse. But I like the rhyme and flow of this, the wordplay, how it takes a look at our own guilt that weighs us down, And this here, duped by death, we look askance, a dance macabre, sulfic voice, a priestless choice, hoist the moat. I like her use of the word moat for the idea that that smallest speck that can become an irritation. And also, howl ye phantom, burnished oils, thick the coils of rue. I don't know if she meant like rue as in the color red, but that's what it makes me think of. It makes me think of the pain of bloodlust that comes forth in the darkest of times. I definitely thought this was a powerful dark rite on the idea of religion that brings forth the blood and the guilt of mankind. So very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Inauspicious Mystic by Jody Melton. In twilight's hush, a whisper through the gloom, one pallid paint of daubs with shades of doom, a scene of sorcery upon his stage, with strokes of darkness he doth thus engage. A man in white, with eyes that pierce the night, confronts the phantom, wraiths devoid of light, their twisted limbs like serpents in the air, they coil and dance with an infernal flare. The cloaks that billow, secrets they enshroud, eclipse the moon and weave a midnight cloud. His stance defies the spectral ballet swirl, a lone scorched figure against the ghostly whirl. The ground is strewn with remnants of the fray, a silent witness to the disarray. An angel's fall, a demon's rise, it seems, a tapestry of nightmarish dreams. He battles not with sword nor shield in hand, but with the will that few could understand, a war of worlds unseen, yet felt within, where light and shadow dance upon the skin. The fallen one is quiet as now sealed, like motionless, his fate forever steals. The struggle etched upon the dancer's face, a battle between disgrace and great. Canvas holds a duel of darkest lore, where each brushstroke is a soldier in the wall. The artist's hand a conduit of fear, unveiling a realm where phantoms are drawing near. And in this eerie otherworldly fray, the boundaries of sanity soon give way. The night, alive with scenes that chill the bone, and shadows claim the kingdom, throne by throne. And pause.
Great read, Rex. And I have to say, this is a very impressive story poem. I really like the way that Jody creates the story with great rhyme and flow, brilliant dark imagery. He really paints with his words and great word choices. I really like the cloaks that billow, secrets they enshroud, eclipse the moon and weave a midnight cloud. His stance defies the spectral ballet's swirl, a lone staunch figure against the ghostly whirl. And you can see where he definitely takes elements from the painting itself and gives us that idea of one who is putting on that show within the embrace of darkness. What else here? This canvas holds a duel of darkest lure, where each brush stroke is a soldier in the war. The artist's hand, a conduit of fear, unveils a realm where phantoms are drawing near. I like that has to do with the idea that, you know, we need to be aware that there are those things out there which we will not always see. You know, there are spiritual battles going on. And many artists, including Goya, have captured the essence of those spiritual battles, those battles between dark and light, between between good and evil. I like how he paints this epic picture of this battle, of which we don't know the ending until the final curtain falls. And amazing write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the picture reminds me of something I've seen again recently. But there's a interview with the vampire. There's a scene after they thought they killed off Lestat. Louis and the girl, Claudia, go over to Paris to see if they can find vampires. And they come across one who buggers off another one, then offers up a card, Théâtre des Vampires, and invites the two to come and see their show. And this picture kind of walks on that note of how death is easy in the moment, playing out for the audience, which doesn't know any better because they think it's just the play.
I can definitely, that's a great connection there. I like that. I like that very much. Cool. Yeah, it's been a long time. You know, I need to watch that movie again. It's been too long. And great movie. And all right. Well, what do we got next, Rex?
Come, Reverend, Come by Memnon. And you've got a sound card for that.
Yes, we do. All right. Here we go.
Come, Reverend, come. Join the dance macabre with fleet lutes. We whiskey away. Tap, tap, tap on the parquet floor. Boom, boom, boom. Coat drums. The vibrations making your heart throb. Hold on to your little lap. Lest your panting breath snuffs it out. Let the sake here hold on to it instead. Round and round we'll go, following the music's echo, till we're dancing among the stars. Take up your robes, Reverend. We have no need of it here. Let the celestial light bathe your nakedness. Let go. Your inhibitions. You are among friends after all. Your prudence needs nothing here. Take a bite of flesh. Feel it yield to your touch. Let your carnal desires consume you. And when darkness gives way to the conquering light, remember this story and how it you were.
Great read and write, Mamya. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. This is a brilliant dark write spoken in the narrative of from the voice of a demonic entity who is luring a reverend, a man of the cloth, into a world of temptation. I really like this all the way through. You know, come, Reverend, come, join this dance macabre. Great use of the phrase dance macabre. With fleet hoofs will whisk you away. Tap, tap, tap on the parquet floor. Boom, boom, boom. Love the use of those sound words, those whatever it is, onomatopoeias or however you pronounce that word. I think that brings the poem to life. And take off your robes, Reverend. You have no need of it here. Let celestial light bathe your nakedness. Let go your inhibitions. You are among fiends after all. And I thought that was wonderful wordplay, you know, where it's like, you know, instead of you are among friends, you are among fiends. I like how this speaks on that exposure, and it's that literal exposure, but it's also a metaphorical exposure in the idea that once you bare yourself to temptation, it will keep coming back. So an amazing dark rite, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I don't think it's about the temptation, because it's clear the priest has already been there and done that. This is just a new realm dipping into. It reminds me of Eyes Wide Shut, the mansion scene where everybody, you've got the demonic circle, and then everybody getting into their roles of who's doing whom, what, where, when, how, and why, all in that mansion, which was just kind of taken over for the night for this spoilage of arcane rituals and just the idea of dipping into the insanity of that, and Aleister Crowley, do what thou willst, so to speak. And then that note, how weak you were. Well, because you forsake all of your rituals, your promises, your devoutism, because you are that weak. And that gives me a foothold.
I like that. I like that. Very cool thought. I could definitely see that. I still see it myself as being about the temptation, but I think like many poems, it can have a layered thought to it. So very cool there. All right. And what do we have next?
Yes. We got final notice by Poetically Written.
All right. Is it my turn to read or yours?
Yep.
Oh, you're right. It is. All right. Glad one of us is keeping track. All right. Final notice by Poetically Written. Madam, please, you'll need to read. They're closing in at twice the speed. Three scouts were sent, just one returned. My fears that soon this place will burn. The king has found his resting place. Try thinking back. Look, here's his vase. Inside's the ash that tips the top. Please read the note. This needs to stop. Surrender now or we'll be killed. Their men were told to fire at will. They're not just men but beasts, you see. You'll see. No soul should see captivity. The iron gates can't hold them back. Most vicious plan is forced attack. Those guys aren't cutting any slack. There's no escape, just picture that. They've reached the fence that holds the hill, 500 men to line the field. They've set their sights on one to kill, just one request, please sign the bill. End poem. And I have to say Poetically Written is fairly new to me. Though I have seen their name before, and I've seen them write for some of our contests now, which I'm glad they've been inspired, and I hope to continue to see more of them writing for the shows. So thank you for that. I'm glad they were inspired. And before I comment further, your thoughts, Rex?
It kind of reads as a note. Let's see. Go with the French Revolution. Hey. Please, madam, the idea of madam, and then the king has found his resting place. Look, here's his vase inside the ash and tips the top. Please read the note that needs to stop. Surrender now, we'll all be killed. And then that idea in Alaska, hey, they might burn this place down. Please sign the bill. I need to get paid for all my troubles.
Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to laugh so loud. It was just funny.
No, that was it.
Oh, that was it. Okay. I thought maybe my guffaw interrupted you or something. But very cool. I like that you specifically brought up the French Revolution, and I could totally see that. When you said that, I was like, yeah, that would make sense. And, you know, maybe like speaking to Marie Antoinette, you know, and, but I did like the, at the end, how there was that kind of that dark humor. And I also like that she has the phrase Kill Bill in there, even though it's a different kind of bill, you know, but it makes me think of that movie Kill Bill. But, this was quite the epic tale told with the great rhyme and flow. You know, there's something about it, though. I will admit that I even though it's not directly said, I kind of got the impression that maybe this person who's pretending to be her best friend is actually working for the enemy, you know, especially in the way that they're trying to get them to sign the bill. And, you know, and I could be wrong because it's not directly said, but, you know, with the ending and the dramatic elements of the rite, it's almost as if this idea of fear-mongering, of manipulating somebody into doing what you want them to do. But I thought this was just a great dark rite. And very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Ahoy by Grant G. The beast's hoofs stomp across, clumping on boards. The sight before him delights his black soul. People sit huddled out in the cold. Some bleed, some lie injured or sick after fleeing from home. Ships sailed away after leaving them on this dreaded isle, which has death's putrid stench and bones on its shore. While walking towards hoof stomp on boards, beast hides his face but flaunts his sharp horns. Can be heard from every person in sight, faces distort while choking with fright. A roar, then a growl, the beast hunger calls. He grabs the young wench, cracking her bones. A leg or an arm, he can't yet decide. He eats her for food, no thought for pride. He bites and he chomps, ignoring her screams, crunching on bones. Her blood tastes like dreams and bones.
Great read there, Rex. You better go get yourself a drink of water or something. My goodness gracious. I like this. Ahoy. You know, that is an interesting title. I like that. I like that for a one-word title because it's a, you know, it's a greeting. So, you know, it makes you think of something friendly as if something friendly has lured this woman in. Ships sailed away, leaving them on this dreaded isle, which has death's putrid stench and bones on its shore. I really like that he's telling this dark story, and he's got these people placed on this island where, you know, you just don't know what's there. You're unfamiliar with the territory. It's kind of got like a whole a Lord of the Flies type feel to it. But not quite Lord of the Flies, but that's the first thing that came to my mind. But I like that because you always think, you know, if you were trapped on an island and you couldn't escape, you know, whatever darkness, whatever horror. Actually, it kind of makes me think of the show Lost, but like whatever darkness, whatever horror is on that island, it cannot be escaped from easily. I thought this had quite some powerful lines to it. Gasps can be heard from every person in sight. Faces distort, all choking with fright. A roar, then a growl, the beast hunger calls. He grabs a young wench, cracking her bones. And I could really go all the way through, but the how I like how Grant gets so visceral. And there's also, you know, again, some dark humor, at least for me there is. Maybe it's because I'm just a little too dark and twisted, but a leg or an arm, he can't yet decide. He needs her for food, note of a bride. And I like how that speaks on the idea of a woman being used for what she can offer up. And I think there's an underlying metaphor there, or at least there could be, in the idea of, you know, destroying what should have been beautiful and pure. So an amazing dark rite and very well done. And Rex, do you feel ready to comment?
Sure. All right. Roll a couple of ways. The idea of the Ahoy angle and the dreaded isle, so to speak, conjures up that note of like a devil's island that's occupied. Reminds me of the old Indian stories about the 10 to 15 foot giants that used to live out in the Midwest, and he used to eat the regular Indians, so they had to destroy them. And one of those tales was they drove the last remaining giants into a cave because there were more of them than him. And with grasses and wood, and suffocated him to death. Then threw him deep down into the well of the cave itself, so he'd never be able to escape in legend or after death. But it also works as a metaphor. Does that note to a leg or an arm he can't yet decide, he needs for food, no thoughts of a bride. So it kind of hits me with the idea of the Donner Party and the getting lost in the in the mountains and being forced to eat the people.
Yeah, I could see that. I like that you brought up the Donner Party, because yeah, I can see that connection, but also the Native American legend. That's very cool. I'll have to read more about that. It kind of sounds like there in some lore there's I do remember reading about a creature that's very similar to the Wendigo, but grew in size, you know, grew giant. Although that might have been the Wendigo itself, because in some lore of that, it does grow in proportion to how much it has eaten.
Was those Indians that gravitated to the taste of human flesh, so they turned into that monster which crave nothing but human flesh.
Yep, exactly. But very cool, very cool. All right, what do we got next?
Devil's Whispers by Betty Page.
Pour yourself whiskey in a room lit by candles. Devil's whispers scream. This is no bad dream. A virgin lies on his bed. To him she will wed. Savagely takes her. Demons laugh, so filled with lust, as they take their turn. She lays there helpless, angelically glowing sweet, moaning in darkness. Blood cascades to ground, spilling from soft pink petals. Rose begins to bloom. Tangled thorns pierce her, pinning in place. They trap her, obeying Satan. Immortal Lilith emerges as a phoenix, illuminating. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Kind of a twist. Liz was supposedly
Adam's first wife who wouldn't obey him, so she decided to go off on her own.
And with this one, I walks in that note of taking in the devil's back angle and then coming under his wing, so to speak, with that emerges as a phoenix illuminating. Depends what you're illuminating.
I like that. I like that. Very cool comment. This was really just, it's horrifying darkness with the idea of, you know, the helplessness felt. She lays there helpless, angelically glowing, sweet, moaning in darkness. Blood cascades to ground, spilling from soft pink petals. Rose begins to bloom. I like the line, rose begins to bloom. It has a mythological feel to it, as if the idea of the beauty that comes forth from her own spilled blood. And I like that you brought up the end with the immortal Lilith emerges as a phoenix illuminating, because Lilith being in, as you were saying, in mythology, Adam's first wife and rebelling against him and rebelling against God, you know, has become that, you know, symbol of rebellion. And I really like how Betty has put in the idea of the Lilith as representing all rebellious women, and the idea of a woman who's attacked and then rises like a phoenix out of the ashes. I think this is, it works well on a mythological level, but it also works well on the idea of the horrific violence that can happen and the idea of healing your own soul to rise out of those ashes. So amazing right and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Signature by Papa Terminus. Spin me a yarn, O brutish hag, when temptation and strife blistered the very fabric of this tapestry that you had spun ages ago. For the womb has been stained with the blood of enemies, and the elements of pain are scribbled on a weather-worn face. O haggard woman, signature of fate is only skin deep. Tell me a secret, whispered in my ear, old crone, so I may face the terror, or should I just disappear, casting off my saintly robes and dance with you around the bonfire? And, like a spider, you continue to spin your yarn, a macabre tale of terror etching on the face of the clock, striking at 3 a.m. Now I can feel those withered hands throttle me. For these terrible visions is all I see, a quill that drips viscous liquid and an inkwell spilling on a black book. All that is left of me is the grimace written upon my face. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I always enjoy Papa Terminus's AN. I won't read the whole thing, but I really like that he says, oh, what Gothic poet would not jump at the chance to write a poem inspired by the artwork of Francisco Goya. So I'm really glad that he was inspired. And I really enjoy and appreciate the narrative of this, and how, you know, this man speaks to this hag, this witch, throughout history, throughout mythology and literature, there have often times been those who have turned to the hag, to the witch, and with absolute disgust, but at the same time with a desire to learn. I mean, there's even parts, and I can't quote which part, but in the Old Testament of the Bible, there are people, I believe Solomon was one of those who oftentimes turned to what would have been called a seer or a witch. I really like, for the wool has been stained with the blood of my enemies, and the elements of pain are scribbled on a weather-worn face. Oh, haggard woman, signature of faith is only skin deep. Tell me a secret, whisper in my ear, old crone, so I may face the terror, or should I just disappear, casting off my saintly robes and dance with you around the bonfire? I also really like that within those lines, there's this idea of an existential crisis, of someone faced with the question of who am I and who am I meant to be? This definitely has brilliant imagery and metaphors and powerful dark lines, and is very well done. And Rex, what did you glean from this?
Two things. A guy who's seen beyond the veil, and that note in the back end, for these horrible visions is all I see, a quill that drips viscous liquid and an inkwell spilling on a black book. All that is left to me is the grimace written upon my face. Kind of that note to jotting down all that happened, occurred, and the spell that it brought that brought it forth, and it's all in the Necronomicon, that book which houses all the nasty tidbits of what you can get into and what you might find on the other end. Now, the other side of that, I could see this as Nostradamus and all those visions that plagued him, and how he thought and went through it while writing out his little tidbits about the future.
I like that. I like both of those views, but I think it was really cool that you brought up Nostradamus and how he was plagued with those visions. So great observations. And what do we got next, Rex?
The Horrific Denial of Kent Smith.
Stark, intimate alienation, the last of the old Spanish masters, incisive upheaval of his identity inside the lost persona of Spain, eerily disturbing his world gone mad, as though desperate to return to a younger, healthier Spain. Devours his once promising youth, cynical self-destruction, apocalyptic, the full whiteness of the eyes and all-consuming fear, foreboding shame, a pact with Satan, the Garden of Eden turned upside down. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts on this, right?
Only bites into the upheaval, the fanaticism, the chaos brought on by anarchism, and how society breaks down within that role, because he does hit on that desperate return to a young, healthier Spain, and then digs, devours his once promising youth, cynical, self-destructive apocalypse, the full whiteness of the eyes and all-consuming fear, the idea of delivering social commentary within the paintings that he's drawn out, but also still dipping into the maybe the perversity of both church and what it preaches, as well as the disintegration of societal views to begin with.
I like that, yeah, especially when you mentioned the disintegration of church and what could be the disintegration of society. I have to say, I was amused by the fact that you said it takes a bite into, and he had written to the artwork of Saturn eating his son. I thought that really amused me. But you know, I don't really know what was happening in Spain at this time, but this poem makes me want to kind of do some research, and I like poetry that makes me think and makes me want to do research. You know, especially when it says, eerily disturbing, his world gone mad, as though desperate to return to a younger, healthier Spain. So it seems like as if that time, not only was he going through some personal upheaval, but the country of Spain, his home country itself, was going through. I also really like where he uses, where Ken Smith uses the phrase, in all-consuming fear, as if, you know, the idea that we oftentimes destroy ourselves, we oftentimes lash out and destroy others as well, not necessarily out of anger, but fear that's disguised as anger. Really a great write with some social commentary on destruction and a world turned upside down. So very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Okay. We have... Time by Diego Cerebretic. I remember that Goya's painting of Saturn devouring one of his children made a deep impression on me when I was a teenager. Those crazed eyes, that blood of a mutilated body being devoured by a tremendously open mouth. Until one day in the Prado Museum, I bought a reproduction and put it on the wall in my house. I realized that people did not understand how I could hang such a terrible painting, which I would see every day. Such absolute cruelty that in turn is just as cruel to itself, self-destructing in such a carnal way. And I thought that just as we raise plants and animals to eat them, time does the same to us. Perhaps I was a young man with unspeakable fear of death, that fear that never goes away. I am now in my 60s. My life went through some very dark times, some very bright times, and most of them normal. I suffered tragically for love. My parents died. I got married. My sons were born and were now men. I was happy in a way I never thought I would be. I also felt the hell of mental illness. I met God, who along with time healed my greatest wounds. A God who wraps death and life in the same embrace, that time that damaged me and healed me. But I'm still amazed by that image of Goya. I think of the time that passes and transforms us, and that in the same way we transform it. It could be our Father who gives us our identity with its changes and cycles, and who in the same way takes it away from us. That we are born wrapped in flesh and blood, that in flesh and blood we make our lives, and in flesh and blood we die. And one day, I realized that time is ourselves, and that sometimes we make it go slower or faster, or we can also make it almost stop, as a dark mirror that still impresses me. As dark as luminous is the light that allows me to see it. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. What an amazing write. You know, I really like how he delves into Goya's painting of Saturn devouring his son. And how it relates to his own personal life, and how he bought the painting, and that would make for a great conversation piece. And I can see, because it is a very disturbing painting, because it is a reflection of our own beastly appetites, of our own destruction. But this really, I think, gets particularly deep when he focuses on how time consumes us, and the fear of time. You know, perhaps I was a young man with an unspeakable fear of death, that fear that never goes away. And then I like how he goes into where he is now with his life, and he can look back and he can see the blessings and the hard times. And there's a more of an acceptance of death, but more of an understanding of death, and yet at the same time, you know, we realize the ultimate consumer of life is time. Another line I really particularly like in this is, I look now at that terrifying picture as a dark mirror that still impresses me. And I like that a dark mirror can be a mirror just looking at himself and his own inner appetites or anger or fear, but it can also be a reflection of society. So great writing, very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I like that, yeah. It is a reflection of society. It's a reflection of humanity, where it feasts on itself. It does bring up the thought of Saturn eating its children, and then he hits on that note of time. And one day I realized that time is ourselves, that sometimes we make it go slower or faster, or we can also make it stop, almost stop. It's a nice note that. But that is also that reference to the killing of Saturn by Cronus. So that it's on the note of time as well on that. But the idea, time is precious. And you look at that picture, you do see there is death in it. That's obvious. And it's all a matter of perspective and how you take it. Because of the dark period back then, it goes to what's going on around them. They were occupied for 8 years by Napoleon, or 6 years. And then there was the civil war that came after that. So there was a lot going on at dark times in the history of that country. So it's easy how you look at the world just eating itself in the moment, man eating humanity, just through the killing, the occupation, the starving, and everything else that goes along with it.
Yeah, I can say that. Absolutely. Great comment. All right. Yeah, because, I think, honestly, the idea of cannibalism or having to make that choice is, you know, definitely one of the greatest fears. You know, I don't, you know, like we all, none of us ever want to be in that situation. And when we think about people who have been, like, you know, the Donner Party, it terrifies us. Great observations there, Rex. And what do we got next?
Treat Yourself to Sin by Oak Blue.
All right. I am a writer with a vast emptiness within. I started writing when I was bored and while watching my friend on board a ship. I noticed a tiny fly by the rose hip. A garden was in full bloom. And then the inspiration filled the room. Like an acrobat, I walked a fine line between the gory and the divine. For my true inclinations are benign, a malevolent joke made by death. She made me wear a laurel wreath and treated me to the best pieces of my writing. Damn, that was exciting. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, a little note to dark humor. A malevolent joke made by death. She made me wear a laurel wreath and treated me to the best pieces of my writing. Damn, that was it. But it's almost a thrill-seeking note in that, damn, that was exciting. And she does hit on that idea of person reads pieces of paper. So get the idea of being force-fed that which you've already written because you went on a tear and you aren't quite satisfied. Yes. You think with the ingestion that it won't be forgotten totally, but reused within the system once more.
Right, exactly. I thought this was a different take on the prompt, and I thought that was really cool. I know she put a little note saying, from the point of view of a person who eats pieces of paper, if I get the 10th painting prompt right. And the 10th painting prompt was actually a priest pouring oil into a lamp held by a devil. But to me, there's no right or wrong. I mean, you know, if what she saw was, you know, something to do with somebody eating paper, that is absolutely fine. I did like the dark humor in this. It is ironic to me that she wrote about somebody eating paper, and my son, who has pica, does eat paper along with other non-food things. I also like how this could be, you know, while it does have that dark metaphor, it actually also has the idea, or that dark humor, it also has to me the idea of a metaphor of being so desperate to find wisdom to find wisdom that we will devour parchment with other people's words. I really like where she says, I am a writer with a vast emptiness within. I thought that really touched well on the idea of a sense of depression or despair or need to, you know, have that emptiness filled. And then also the lines, a malevolent joke made by death, you know, because even though I don't know if she actually meant to be writing about the disorder of pica, it is a disorder that kills, you know, especially adults that have pica who, if they're not, you know, and even children. Like, I've been fortunate with my son, thankfully, to always get him either to the doctor at time or get what he has in his mouth out. But, you know, there have been, even throughout history, there have been some famous cases of people who had pica, and their stomachs were opened after their death, and things found within their stomachs was just absolutely horrifying. But absolutely an intriguing write and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Bane of the Black Sheep.
Ah, right. And this is by Robert M., and we have a recording for this. So here we go.
This is my recital of Bane of the Black Sheep, a poem inspired by the art of Francisco Goya. Shed every worry, detach from your pain. No weight of trust or subjection remain. Forget all your troubles, for they are now mine. Dismiss all your burdens, and all will be fine. Blame me for your sake, pin me to crosses. I'll scapegoat your virtues and soak all the losses. None of it's your fault, the world is not fair. Place all the onus within my feigned care. Your personal demon to brandish your finger, absorbing derision as long as I linger. I am your black sheep, I'm your pariah. Preach me your morals, I'll set them on fire. Drink in the comfort of living guilt-free. Displace all the shame and indignance on me. You're now the martyr among paper nooses, peppering failures with slews of excuses. Reality's lurking and you cannot cope, since I am no longer a vestige of hope. Delusions now crumble in this kingdom made. Now all of your failings are aptly displayed. In all of your blindness, in all of your haste, truth was the poison that laid you to waste. I was your black sheep, your wretched messiah. forever anointed by every denier. Choke on your weakness and drown in your lies, for your ocean of falsehoods became your demise.
Great read and write there, Robert. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Ooh, I really like how he did that with that dark, creepy, almost like demonic type read. It worked really well for this particular write. And Rex, your thoughts?
The ease of blaming everyone for everything else, accepting no idea that you are part of the problem that you so demonstrably offer up everyone else as the failure, the one who brings me down to my knees, the one that keeps me on my knees, the one that makes me feel so indignant, so anointed as one who is being trod upon. And it all comes down to the fact, you want to fill your head with those kind of lines? That's easy. But someday, when the light gets shone upon the darkness that you hold, all of that falls apart in the moment. And you go with the way of the dodo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Amen to that, Rex. Well said there. Yeah, the great write, amazing rhyme and flow. I like that he speaks in the voice of the scapegoat, the one that people need to point at. People, instead of owning up to their own evil, to their own mistakes, need to, as you were saying, Rex, have someone to blame. I really like this all the way through, but blame me for your sake, pin me to crosses, I'll scapegoat your virtues and soak all the losses. None of it's your fault, the world is not fair, place all the onus within my feigned care. I really like the use of the word onus. That burden of responsibility, that was a great word choice. Delusions now crumble in this kingdom made. Now all of your failings are aptly displayed. The idea that you can send the scapegoat out into the desert, but eventually it will come back to you. And it will be carrying with it a mirror of your own failings. I'm really glad that Robert was inspired by the artwork and that he shared this with us. A powerful dark write, very well done. All right. And do we have another poem? Or?
Nope, that was it.
Okay, that's what I thought. This has been a great night of dark poetry. Thank you so much, Rex, for being my co-host, as always. Thank you, everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Fill My Eyes and everything that she does in the background. Please make sure to keep an eye out on the topic boards and contests put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join Fill My Eyes and Company tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for open poetry. Saturday, I believe, is Gray Eyes Smith and Daniel DeShane with Bad Company. Yes, it is. And then Sunday is Rhythm and Rhyme, and you have a contest running for that, of course, Rex, and it's an awesome contest. So what do you got?
Tonics and the Lemon Parade.
Yes. Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you going to say something more?
No.
Okay. Okay. And for Tuesdays after midnight show, I did want to mention that Rex and I are going to do open after midnight. I will be putting a topic board up for that, and people can share their after midnight rites that, you know, have that vibe of edgy, hard-hitting, raw, gritty, and all that after midnight stuff that we look for. So... And awesome show tonight, Rex. Thank you. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, gang.